Okay, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Another good week of learning. So I chose a topic. We're going to talk. Mitzvah Hashem will speak the next couple of weeks. Hi Jay, how are you? We'll be speaking the next couple of weeks about the sakana and the obligation to guard oneself from sakana. So I titled the shiur, what's the responsibility to be careful from nezek, from injury or from sakana, from danger? And shomer pesayim Hashem. On the other hand, we have a concept that Hashem protects. Hashem protects the fools. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that Hashem protects the fools. That if we don't know how to protect ourselves, if we're not able to protect ourselves, we can expect that Hashem will afford us the siyata d'shamaya and the protection. So how do we weigh this? So of course we all have in mind the current situation, COVID. I'm not directly speaking to COVID. After we go through the sources and after we see the different marimekoimis, so then maybe we'll have more tools to be able to assess or to understand what our responsibility is during the current situation, the current pandemic. Okay, let's first start with a Gemara in Brachas. Daf Lamed Beis, Amud Beis. So how do we know in the first place that there is an obligation to protect oneself, to guard from danger? Who says we're obligated to guard ourselves from danger? So Tana Rabban, this is a beautiful Gemara in Maseches Brachas. So Ma'aseh b'Chasidecha, the Gemara doesn't tell us who it is. The Gemara elsewhere says who the Chasid might be. Whenever it says Chasid, the Gemara has different opinions who the Chasid might be. But for the purpose of this story, there's a story of a chassid, a righteous individual, Shayim Espalo Baderach. He was davening Shmoneh Esrei on the road. Bosar Echad, so a officer, some general came. The Nosam Shalom, and he greeted this chassid who was in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. Now, when there's no danger, you're not allowed to interrupt, even for Kavod, you're not allowed to interrupt during Shmoneh Esrei. So the chassid, as the halacha requires, did not respond to this sar. So himtin loy achesayim filosay. So the sar was taken aback. He waited till the chassid finished his Shmoneh Esrei. La'achar shesayim filosay, after the chassid finished, omrale. So this general said to the chassid, Reka, empty-headed one, foolish one, halaykasa b'toyraschem, doesn't it say in your Torah? Somehow if this sar was a Roman general or something, somehow they knew. They were able to debate the psukim of the Torah. Doesn't it say in your Torah, "Raki shomer lecha ushmor nafshecha," that you have to guard yourself, you have to guard your soul, you have to guard your life? Uksiv, another pasuk, "V'nishmartim ma'od l'nafshei seichem." This is a famous pasuk that we always quote. "V'nishmartim ma'od l'nafshei seichem." One has to guard ma'od extremely, their nefesh, their lives. So asks the sar to the chassid, "Kishenasati lecha shalom, lama lo yechzarti l'shalom?" Doesn't the Torah say you have to protect yourself? You can't be reckless. When I greeted you, why didn't you respond? If I would cut your head off right on the spot, who would claim your blood from my hands? No one would even know about it. So the chassid realized he was in deep water. He says to the sar, "Hamtin, give me a chance, and I'll appease you. I'll explain my actions to you." Omrale, the chassid says to the general, "Ilu hayisa oimid afteimelech basar adam." Imagine if you would be standing before the king, a mortal king. "Ubach havercha v'nasa l'chashol." And your friend, while you're standing at attention before the king, your friend would come and give you a high five. He'd say, "Shalom, hayisa machsoloi," would you respond? Omrale, "Lav." So the Tsar says, if I'm standing at attention in front of in the king's presence, of course I wouldn't respond. "V'imayisa," and if you would respond, if you would interrupt your standing, your salute to the king, what would the king do? They would chop my head off. So So the chassid said, "Oh, you said it yourself." You just admitted that if you would be standing before a mortal king, where the king himself is here today and gone tomorrow, kach, that's how you would behave. You would not dare to respond to someone who is who is wishing you well while you're standing before the immortal king. I'm standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He lives forever. He's eternal. So certainly, I can't dare to interrupt my standing before the king. I was in the middle of davening Shmona Esrei. Of course, I can't respond to you. Miyad nespayis oisoi sar. So, amazingly enough, the sar accepted the chassid's argument. The nifter oisoi chassid lebeis l'shalom, and the chassid was allowed to return home in peace. A beautiful gemara, inspiring gemara, that the chassid was risking his life to maintain his concentration during Shmona Esrei, not to interrupt Shmona Esrei, even at the expense of offending the Tsar, the general, this Roman general, or whoever he was. We see from here that we learn from these psukim that there's a chiyuv to guard oneself. Now, it's just interesting because who's the one who said this? It was this general, let's call him a Roman general. He's the one of all people who cited these verses as the source that one has to guard oneself. So actually, it's very interesting, and after learning this Gemara, I had this question myself. The Marsha there asks the obvious question. We always say, Shmartim, we throw this pasuk around. If you actually look at the pasuk, the Marsha says these psukim are not speaking about guarding oneself physically at all. That's not at all the context of the pasuk. Let's look at the pasuk inside. So I quoted the first pasuk here. In Dvarim Yud Tes Pasuk Tes, Raki Shamalecha Ushmor Nafshecha Ma'oy. This was the first pasuk that the general quoted. Pentishkach Es Hadvarim Asherau Veinecha. The pasuk says you have to guard yourself, you have to guard your soul, lest you forget what we saw at Har Sinai. This is really an azhara. This is really a warning against forgetting the Torah. The second pasuk, Minishmartim Ma'oy Veinafshei Seichem. What does the pasuk continue saying? Ki lo re'isim kol tmuna b'yoyim diber Hashem aleichem b'choyrei b'toycha esh. You should guard yourself extremely well not to forget, not to think that you saw any kind of image at Har Sinai. Don't attribute any kind of image to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have an image. He's not physical. He's beyond our comprehension. Don't attribute to HaKadosh Baruch Hu any kind of image. Whatever vision we saw at Kriyas Yam Suf and at Har Sinai, whatever vision we saw, like we say in the Adam Zemiris, we see a gibor, we see Taltalim Shechiris, we see black curls, we see an old man, a sage. Whatever image we saw, we have to remember that we are not to attribute a real image to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what these psukim are talking about. These psukim are talking about not forgetting the Torah, taking precaution to not forget the Torah, and taking precaution lest we attribute any sort of image to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Marsha asks this question, and the Marsha says that even though it's the general who was citing these psukim, so perhaps one could say that the general was wrong, he was just provoking, citing these psukim, taking these psukim out of context, but we know that the Rishonim do use these psukim as sources that one must protect oneself and not be reckless. And the Marsha says that the general was correct because the Gemara in Shavuos also, the Gemara itself, not just the Roman general, the Gemara itself also uses these psukim to teach us that one is not allowed to curse oneself, can't put himself into any kind of danger, whether it's spiritual danger or physical danger. So the Marsha says that Chazal must have had some kind of Mesorah. They must have had a tradition that this pasuk, when it says you should surely guard yourself and guard your soul, not only is it referring to the spiritual damage of forgetting the Torah or forgetting that Hashem has no image, it's also referring to physical protection. We have to guard ourselves. We have to keep safe. And we have to keep our safety physically as well. There must be a Mesorah. The Marsha says that we see that the other Gemaras also learn this as the source. So this general was correct, and this indeed serves as the source. Now, what about the Chassid? Why did the Chassid insist on davening the Shmona Esrei and risk his life of offending the general? What about the Pasuk Taka of Nishmartem Oyden Atshesechem? So the Marsha says that you're right. If the Chassid would have realized that this would have been a Sakana, he would have responded, because the Gemara also says that if a melech asks you, then if you're afraid, mitnei hayira, because you're afraid that you'll be killed, you have to respond. You're not allowed to yet, because pikuach nefesh overrides everything. But the chassid didn't realize that this tsar was going to get so offended, and lo and behold, he was saved based on the siyata d'shmaya that Hashem put in his mind, this argument, this convincing argument, that the tsar was appeased, and he was able to go home peacefully. So on the one hand, the general was right, that you're not allowed to risk your life under any circumstances. It's a lav in the Torah, two lavin in the Torah. On the other hand, the chassid didn't realize that, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him siyata d'shmaya, and Hitaka was saved. So we see at the same time that sometimes a person is in danger, and sometimes he can be saved based on siyata d'shmaya. The Rambam in Hilchos Roitzeach and Shmiras Nefesh, Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Dalet, he brings this halacha that a person has to protect himself, the halacha that we're all familiar with. Kol michshol sheish bo sakanas nefashis, any stumbling block, any danger that could be a sakanas nefashis, mitzvah aseh lahasiroi. So number one is a positive commandment to remove that danger. He learns it out of making a micah. He learns it out of we have to guard ourselves from it. Not only does somebody else have an obligation to remove it, we have to guard ourselves. We have to be very careful. So he cites these psukim of the Gemara. It's brought lahalacha in the Rambam that these psukim are the source that we have to protect ourselves from all danger, not just the spiritual danger of forgetting Maimon Har Sinai, or forgetting that Hashem has no image. We have to guard ourselves from all types of danger, even physical danger. The Rambam says there in Halacha Hey, an interesting point. Many things Chachamim prohibit us from doing because it has Sakanas Nefashis. There are those who are Medayik Asru Chachamim. Some say that it's only in Isidur Abanan because he's speaking about things that are not definitely dangerous. Others say that the Rambam means it's an Issur D'oraisa. Says the Rambam, Kolo Ivra Alayhen, anyone who recklessly violates doing something dangerous for Omar. And the person says, Hareini Misakin Ba'atzmi. The person says, I'm going to put myself in danger. What business is it of anybody else? Right? Why is it anybody else? Why is it your business if I do something dangerous for myself? Well, the person says, I'm not particular. I don't mind doing dangerous mountain climbing or bungee jumping, whatever it is, or stunt flying. I don't mind doing dangerous things. What business is it of yours? So the Rambam says, Makan oisoi makas mardus. They would give him rabbinic lashes. They would give him, it sounds like it's an issur d'rabbanan, they would give you rabbinic lashes. Some people say that the reason why it's only rabbinic lashes is because it could be a lav she'ein by maisa. Sometimes he's just not taking precaution, but he's not necessarily doing something positive to put himself in danger. He's just not taking precaution. So even in such a case, we would give him rabbinic lashes. It's a question if the Rambam means an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabban. So we have the Gemara that brings these two psukim as sources. The Marsha explains that although the context of the Pasuk is spiritual danger, but the Gemara in Shavuos as well seems to apply it to physical danger, so we should take this Gemara literally, and indeed the Rambam brings these psukim as the source that we're not allowed to put ourselves into any danger, and if the person says, it's not your business, or I'm not particular, they would even give him malchus, they would give him lashes, they would punish him, they would enforce the idea of being safe. It's interesting because when I was living in Ottawa, I was once driving down Carling Avenue over there, and I wasn't wearing my seatbelt. I was pulled over by the police, and I actually got a fine, a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt. I was thinking to myself, why is it his business? What difference does it make to anybody else if I'm wearing a seatbelt or not? But that's not the right hashkafa. The right hashkafa is that a person has to be safe. So ever since then, I started wearing my seatbelt. And a person is not allowed to say, what difference does it make to anybody else? Now, we do find examples of things that could potentially be a sakana, but on the other hand, like we said in our title, the Gemara applies a pasuk in Tehillim, Shoimer Pesoyim Hashem. that Hashem watches the foolish. Watching the foolish means what makes us foolish? If a person does something not knowing, not being aware of the danger, or it's something that sort of is beyond our capability of guarding, we're not able to protect ourselves, so Hashem will protect us if we're not able to protect ourselves. So just, it's interesting, let's just explore a little bit some of the examples of where there's a potential danger, where the Gemara does apply the pasuk of Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. Some of these examples we had recently in the Daf Yomi, we had in the Masechet Shabbos. Now this is regardless of whether we understand the danger, some of the dangers are metaphysical, whether we understand the danger or not, that's not really relevant. The Gemara does consider it to be a potential danger, and the Gemara at the same time applies the verse Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. Whether we understand the potential danger or not, it's irrelevant for the purpose of this discussion. So there's a fascinating story. The Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Tes Amud Beis, says that the mazel of Madim. So Madim is Mars, and the Gemara says there, we have it in Erevin as well. The Gemara says there that the various planets correspond to the hours of the day. There really isn't any physical phenomena that we can witness that demonstrates that. Rashi and Erevin cites a sefer who explains what the correlation is between the various mazalas, the planets, the sun, the moon, and the, we don't normally consider the sun to be a planet, but the Gemara considers anything that's visible, the sun, the moon, Mars, and so on, these planets correspond to various hours of the day. So Madim, Mars, so it says that it's red. Mars appears red. So it corresponds to Cherev. It's like the sword. It's like pestilence. It's like punishment. So Mars is a bad omen. So the Gemara tells us that if Mars ever corresponds to an even number, an even hour of the day, the second hour or the sixth hour, so that's bad news because we have Madim, which is Mars, which itself is red like blood, plus it's corresponding to a even number. Zugais is something that the Gemara in Pesachim tells us that for whatever reason the Shadim, the demons, don't like Zugais. So when Mars corresponds to Zugos, that's like a dangerous combination. So the Gemara says you can't bloodlet. So in those days they believed that bloodletting had curative powers. You let the blood out, either it reduces the blood pressure or it gets rid of any kind of bacteria or germs that are in the blood. So sort of like a blood transfusion of sorts. You should not bloodlet on any day where Mars corresponds to an even number of the hour. Like it falls out in the second hour, falls out in the sixth hour, and so on. And you're not allowed to bloodlet on those days. Nevertheless, says the Gemara, that the custom became that they would bloodlet on a Friday, even though Madim falls out, if you go through the calculations there, it falls out on the sixth hour of the day. You're not supposed to bloodlet if Mars falls out on an even number. Nevertheless, since you're supposed to eat a Suda after bloodletting, even when we donate blood today, they give you a drink, they give you a piece of cake, you have to eat something right away. So since on Friday, it's very convenient because you have the Friday night Suda coming up. So the custom became, because of the Doichik, it was hard for people to afford an extra Suda. So they would use the Friday night Suda in order to compensate for the bloodletting. So it became common to bloodlet on Friday. What about the inherent danger? Says the Gemara, Kivin de Dashu Bei Rabim, once it became commonplace, Dashu Bei Rabim was trampled by the Rabim. That's the path that, for whatever reason, the Rabim chose to go. People felt, because of the circumstances, forced, so to speak, to have to overlook this potential danger and start bloodletting on Friday. The lines were around the block at the bloodletting centers. And the reason was because Friday night you're anyway going to have a Suda. People felt they have no choice. So it actually, Hashem actually provides protection. So potentially it could be dangerous. And if this would ever occur on a different day, you should avoid it. But Friday becomes an exception because people felt sort of compelled to do it on Friday. So Shomer Pesoyim Hashem, Hashem extends his shmira, his protection, to fools, to people who are not able, are not willing or able to protect themselves. That's one example. Again, this is a metaphysical example. It's probably beyond our comprehension, all of these different things, but that's not relevant. The Gemara says it's a potential danger. Nevertheless, Hashem looks the other way. Hashem affords protection for those who felt that it was impossible to keep. It became common to bloodlet on Friday, and people, it became permitted because now people are afforded the protection by Hashem. Another Gemara. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah Lamed Amud Beis, this is also another halacha that actually does not apply anymore. The Gemara tells us that if somebody leaves something open, if he leaves food or drink open, not just overnight. We're not talking about the ruach ra of leaving certain foods open overnight. We're talking about leaving something open even for a few minutes in broad daylight. So back in the day, there were snakes and serpents that were prevalent, that were rampant, and there was some percentage, there was some statistic of fear that when the person turned away, a snake would pop out from some hole and would inject poison into the drink or into the food, and it would be forbidden to eat it. So I don't know what it was like. You had to keep all your food covered. You had to keep everything under a constant hashgacha. If you would turn around even for a few moments, the food became prohibited. Now, this is only if there's a reyasa, if there's something wrong with the food, like you see pecking in the food, you see something wrong in the food. The Gemara discusses that it would be a sakana. You have to suspect that a snake injected poison into the food. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, pi te'ena eimoy mishum giloy. So the Gemara says there that when you pluck a fig off of the tree, so by definition, there's going to be a hole in the fig. So when you buy a box of figs in the store, every fig, by definition, is going to have a hole in it. So how do we know that the snake didn't coincidentally inject the poison through that hole? It's true. It doesn't seem as if the fig was chewed any other place, but maybe a snake injected poison into the pea, into the mouth of the te'ena, where it was mechubra, where it was attached to the tree. So the Gemara says, "Ein bo mishum giloy." You don't have to be concerned. It's not subject to the rule of an uncovered fruit. So the Gemara makes an analogy. Come on, who does this follow? This follows. I don't think so. This follows ki haytana. The Tana Rebbe Eliezer, again, this halacha has nothing to do with being left overnight. The halachas of being left overnight have to do with ruach ra. This was a legitimate concern that a snake injected poison, nothing to do with being left overnight, even if it's in broad daylight. If you simply turned around for a few moments and there was enough time for a snake to inject poison and sliver away, you wouldn't be allowed to drink the drink. You have a te'ena, and there's a hole in the te'ena. But you're allowed to dismiss the hole as just being the ordinary pi te'ena, where it was plucked from the tree. It doesn't arouse any suspicion that there was a poison injected. Who does this follow? Rebbe Eliezer. Why? Because Rebbe Eliezer says, oichal adam anav metenam balayla. Because in the middle of the night, imagine you wake up in the middle of the night, there was no light in those days. It's too much of a trouble to turn to light a candle. So you just grab some of the grapes and figs that are on your night table or that are in the fridge. You take them out and you pop them in your mouth. So now, at night, maybe a snake injected poison. Maybe if you would look at the fig or the grape, you would see teeth marks in broad daylight. You're not required to wait till the next day. You're allowed to eat grapes and figs at night. Why? Because we don't see anything wrong with it. If you see that it was penetrated, then you're not allowed to eat it because maybe there's poison injected into it. But if you don't see it, right, you can plead the fifth. If you don't see it, ignorance is bliss. If you don't see it, if you don't see the hole, then it's okay. Just like when there's inherently a hole, the pi te'ena. It's possible that a snake injected venom through that hole, but it's not anything suspicious. So if you don't see any hole at all, because it's the middle of the night, you're also allowed to eat it because it says, Shoymer pesoyim Hashem. So here's another example where we apply the verse, Shoymer pesoyim Hashem. There was a real danger in those days that a snake would inject poison. The halacha in those days was that you're not allowed to drink anything left uncovered because statistically, there was enough of a concern that it warranted forbidding any food that was left uncovered or unwatched. Nevertheless, there were certain leniencies when it was too hard to adhere to the guidelines. Because in the middle of the night, you can't tell if there's a hole. where the actual pita'ina, every fig has a hole. Nevertheless, you don't have to concern yourself with it because there is no reyasa. We don't see any defect in the fig that would arouse suspicion, even though there might be poison in the fruit. That's another example where there's a limit. There's to what extent do I have to be concerned? Says the Gemara, Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. That's another example in the Gemara. There's another Gemara in Nida. This might be a Gemara that's hard to understand. The Gemara tells us that Hamishamish Mitasa Liyoyim Tishin, if a person has relations with his wife, who's Me'uberes, his pregnant wife, on the 90th day, on the end of the first trimester. It's very interesting because the Gemara itself already divided the pregnancy, the gestation period into trimesters. So the first trimester, if a person has relations punct exactly on the end of the first trimester, for some reason it was considered dangerous. Ki'ilu shoifich domin. It's as if he's committing murder. It can cause a miscarriage. It can cause danger to the woman. So the Gemara explains there that during each of the trimesters, sometimes tashmish amita, sometimes intercourse is helpful, is healthy for the vlad. Sometimes it's negative for the vlad, but it's permitted. But the Gemara there says on the 90th day, on the third trimester, on the exact end of the first trimester, it's considered shefech damim. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, Mina yoda, how is this person supposed to know that? Even nowadays, it's impossible. Really, they can't tell exactly when the woman became pregnant, when she exactly became pregnant. So, Mina yoda, how is the person supposed to know? Says Abaye, Mishamish v'hoylech. So the person could have relations normally. Shoymir b'soyim Hashem. Here's another example where adhering to this kind of a guideline is beyond our control. It's beyond our, we can't adhere to such a thing. It will become an unnecessary hardship. And therefore, Shoymer b'soyim Hashem. Hashem affords the shmira to the foolish, to the people that cannot protect themselves. So we have so far, we have three examples. The bloodletting, we have the eating the fruit that might be poisoned, and we have what's harmful for the fetus or harmful for the mother. We can sometimes overlook it. We can take it's an acceptable risk because shomer b'soyim Hashem. The expression acceptable risk. There's another Gemara in Yevamis, and this is more negeya halacha l'maisa. It's a fascinating machloikis between the Ritva and other Rishonim. To what extent do we apply, or in what context do we apply shomer b'soyim Hashem? There's a famous Gemara in Yevamis that we know that in the Midbar, the Jewish people only performed one Korban Pesach. When they left Mitzrayim, they performed Korban Pesach in Egypt that night, midnight of the eve of when they left, that we know. And then they also performed Korban Pesach the following year, but then that was it. The rest of the 40 years, they never performed Korban Pesach. The Gemara says, why not? Because they didn't perform Bris Milah in the desert. Why didn't they perform Bris Milah in the desert? So the Gemara offers a few suggestions. One of the suggestions is, Eima Mishum, the Loinoshev Ruach Tzafoinis, because the Jewish people there were sort of in the Zifa, they sort of were like in Cheren because of the Egel and the Averis that they did. So the sweet northern wind did not blow at that time. So all that was blowing was the dangerous southern winds and so on, but the sweet, pacifying northern wind did not blow. Omer Apapa, Rapapa says, Hilkach Yoimid Iva. If we ever have a cloudy day, or we have a Yoimid Shusa, or a day where the southern wind is blowing, not the northern wind, Loy Malinanbe. So you're not supposed to do Bris Milah, but Loy Mesuchinanbe. And there's the bloodletting again. You can't do bloodletting because the weather permitting. It's not a nice day. If the weather is not right, it's really dangerous to perform a Bris Milah. Somehow the weather outside could affect the Bris Milah, could affect the wound of the Milah for the baby or the bloodletting. Why nowadays do we not concern ourselves with this? The Gemara says, the Dashu Barabim, because this is something that people have simply, they decided to walk over this halacha. People do it all the time. It became sort of not adhered to. It's something that fell by the wayside. People no longer check the weather every time it's the day of the bris. They check the baby, the yellow, the belly boob. but they don't check the weather. Nobody looks in, nobody calls the weatherman whether or not we should do Bris Milah, and therefore we don't have to concern ourselves with the weather. Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem. Now the Ritva says a Chiddush, and I saw a lot of people bring this Ritva. The Ritva says Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem. The Ritva says that the Gemara conclusion is the only reason why we perform a Bris Milah on a cloudy day or on a stormy day when you don't have the sweet northern wind blowing, the reason why we perform a Bris Milah is because one can rely on the miracle that Hashem will protect. We can sort of take the risk. It's an acceptable risk because Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem, says the Ritva Achirish, Ulufum Haitaima. So based on this, Mandaloi Boila Mimel Biyuma De'iva, imagine if a person doesn't want to take the risk. I don't want to rely on a miracle. Maybe I feel that I'm not going to merit the miracle. Why are people doing Bris Milah on a stormy day, on a cloudy day? Because they rely on the mercy of Hashem. Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem. What if the person is afraid to rely on that? He doesn't want to take the risk. Harishus Biyadoi. So the Ritva says, you're justified, you are allowed, you have permission to postpone a Bris Milah due to the weather, right? If you would tell this to anybody, they would think that you're crazy. But imagine if a person would say, according to the Ritva, why aren't you performing the Bris on the eighth day? There's a mitzvah deraisa to perform the Bris Milah on the eighth day. You know why I'm not performing the Bris? Because it's raining outside, because I don't sense that the northern wind is blowing. They look at you like you're crazy. Says the Ritva, that if a person elects to concern himself with the risk because the northern wind is not blowing, it's a stormy weather, it's raining outside, he's allowed to postpone the Bris Milah, says the Ritva. Bishaper Ovet, Cholos Mechashem Pesoyim Hashem, Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem, says the Ritva, is a heter. You're allowed, because nobody concerns themselves with that, you're allowed to take the risk, but it's just a permit. You're allowed to take the risk. You're not required to take the risk. Says the Ritva, a person can choose to be more careful than everybody else and postpone a mitzvah deraisa of Bris Milah. That's what he brings from the Ram. And says the Ritva, B'hu adin, shahayu roi shloi limo b'shabis kishahu yoyim unon. And the Ritva says a bigger chiddush, which is something that the Mefarshim grapple with. I see that the Magia on the Ritva grapples with this. The Ritva says that we know that when a Bris Milah falls out on a Shabbos, so we override the Shabbos in order to perform the eighth day Milah. Milah is Doicha Shabbos. But if the weather is not bright, so the Ritva says it would be proper to postpone the Bris if the weather is not agreeable, because a person is allowed to rely on Shemir B'Soyim Hashem, but you're not required to. So when there's a Shabbos violation, who says that you should rely on a miracle? Maybe better to postpone the Bris. Anyway, you have a heter to postpone the Bris, right? Everybody else who gives the Bris on the eighth day when there's poor weather outside is sort of being reckless. They're just relying on Shemir B'Soyim Hashem. Okay, so they're allowed to, but you're not required to. So if I'm not required to, the Ritva says technically you shouldn't be allowed to do it on Shabbos. So the Ritva puts that out there, that it would be right, it would be proper to postpone a Bris on Shabbos if it's not a sunny day, if the northern wind is not blowing. Why? Because the only reason why we don't pay attention to the weather is because you're not required to. You're allowed to rely on a miracle. Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem. But you're not required to do the Bris today. You're allowed to rely on a miracle. But you're allowed also to postpone the Bris. So when it comes to a Shabbos where you're allowed to postpone it, the Ritva suggests maybe it would be better to postpone it for everyone, because everybody should file for the inclement weather permit and postpone the Bris for after Shabbos. So the Ritva puts that out there. The Beis Yosef in Hilchas Milah brings the Ritva and argues. He cites a Rabbeinu Yeruchim that a Yoim Unon, if there's ever a cloudy day, or a Yoim that it's Menashev Ruach Dreimus, or the southern wind is blowing, whatever that means, so it does not prevent you from doing the Bris, because Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem, the Rabbeinu Menoyah, the Rabbeinu Yeruchim, does not bring any kind of justification of postponing the Bris. And we bring from Rabbeinu Menoyah, Lehedya, explicitly that one should be dafkin, not postpone the Bris. If there's nothing physically wrong with the baby, For example, the person wants to go on the derech, like that might be something that causes a physical hardship on the baby. But barring that, if there's no physical, if there's no apparent physical damage, physical stress on the baby, ein mashin es amila b'shvilo. You do not delay the bris. Ki heichin lo mashinon b'shvil neshivas ruchas d'shem b'shem b'shem. Just as we are not permitted, Rabbeinu Manoach openly disagrees with Ritva, one is not permitted to postpone a bris because the weather is inclement weather, because Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. So we actually have a machlekes between the Ritva and between the Rabbeinu Yeruchim and Rabbeinu Manoach. Is Shomer B'Soyim Hashem a heter? I'm allowed to take the risk. It's an acceptable risk because Shomer B'Soyim Hashem, but at the same time, I'm not required to take the risk, even if it means postponing the bris milah and forfeiting the bris milah of the eighth day? Or do we say, Shomer B'Soyim Hashem dictates that it's an acceptable risk, and therefore we click back, the mitzvah snaps back, and I'm required to do the bris, even to the extent of being Doiches Shabbos. And the Beis Yosef paskins, like the Rabbeinu Yeruchim, and like the Rabbeinu Manoach. The Beis Yosef in Shulchan Aruch does not give you the choice that if it's a cloudy day, you have the right to postpone the bris. He does not bring that at all. He says you should do the bris under any circumstances. Okay. The Rambam and the Rosh as well, they just say that you can do the bris, and they don't tell you what the dangers are, apparently indicating that we're not supposed to, we're not supposed to cite those dangers, we're not allowed to postpone the bris. And that's the halacha. The halacha is that we do not postpone the bris for any of these extreme concerns. Now, the Trumas Hadeshin brings a very interesting shiloh. We all know that the Gemara talks about a katlanis. A katlanis is a woman who had multiple husbands and one husband dies one after the other. There's actually a machlekes in the Gemara. Why do we attribute the death of the husband to this woman? Is it because somehow he died as a result of the relations with this woman? So clearly there's something about this woman. Or even if the person died by falling off a roof or some unrelated way, maybe it has to do with this woman's mazel. So again, either it's some sort of physical diagnosis that we determined, that we identified, or it's some metaphysical. We're attributing a metaphysical reason to this woman. She's called a katlanis. What's the expression in English? A black widow. I think black widow is the expression in English. That this woman is just killing one husband after another, right? We're not accusing her of murder. We're just saying that somehow, either for physical reasons or for metaphysical reasons, every husband she marries drops dead. So now, the Trumas Hadeshin says the following. The Trumas Hadeshin says that there are many Talmidei Chachamim, Gedoylin, and Anshei Maisa Hagunim. There are plenty of upstanding, upright Talmidei Chachamim, good citizens, who are not particular about marrying a woman whose husbands, multiple husbands, have died. And not only that, nobody objects to such a wedding, and nobody's criticizing them. So the question is there a smach for this kula or not? So that whoever this petitioner was, he asks the Trumas Hadeshin, what's going on over here? Is there anything to rely on? It's against the Gemara. The Gemara says it is a concept of a katlanis. So the Trumas Hadeshin brings that the Rambam says it's forbidden, says the Trumas Hadeshin in the Tshuva, Yira the Lav Shaper Avdi Beloikavdi. These people, whoever they are, even though they're Talmidei Chachamim Gedoylim and Anshei Maisa Hagunim, but they're acting improperly by marrying this woman who keeps on killing her husbands. Why? Because the Chachamim say in the Gemara, Tigmar Yavamis, that the sages of the Talmud were matmiya, they were baffled of other Talmidei Chachamim who took the risk to marry a woman who's been killing her multiple husbands. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, the Trumas Hadeshin admits, he cites in Or Zeruah, it says there in the Magia, on the bottom of the Trumas Hadeshin, that they weren't able to find this Kuba of the Or Zeruah, but we can take the Trumas Hadeshin's word for it. The Trumas Hadeshin says that he found an Or Zeruah who says that the halacha is like Rebbe, that after two deaths, she's no longer supposed to marry a third husband. Nevertheless, it's not forbidden to marry the woman, because it's not a definitive suspicion. What kind of suspicion is this? That just because two husbands died, that means that she's somehow killing her husband? It's only a suffik shash. It's a reason for concern. says the Or Zivua. So again, the Rambam says that it's forbidden. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. It's forbidden to marry a woman whose husband, after two husbands, that they died mysteriously after marrying this woman. A third man is not supposed to marry the woman. That's what's brought in Shulchan Aruch. But there is an Or Zivua out there who says that it's not a prohibition. It's just advice. It's a suffik chash. It's a suspicion, but it's not an outright prohibition, and therefore that might be the justification for these gedolim who are marrying. Now, says the Trumas Hadeshin, maybe these chachamim, whoever they were relying on the Or Zivua, the samchi alma. Maybe that's what they're relying on. The loy chashinin le suffik chashasha. And therefore, since the Or Zivua says that it's not a definitive concern, it's just a suspicion, it's just a far-fetched concern, it's just a small percentage. So therefore, maybe these chachamim were going with the Or Zivua that it's only a small percentage, and therefore they weren't concerning themselves with it, just like we're not concerned with a lot of things that the chachamim consider to be a sakana because of Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. That should be spelled with a saf, not with a sama. Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. Now, so the Trumas Hadeshin says something very fascinating. The Trumas Hadeshin himself is really opposed to it because most Rishonim say that it's a prohibition to marry this Katlanis. On the other hand, he cites an Or Zivua who says it's not a definitive chashash, it's only a potential chashash. It's a chashash, it's a suspicion, it's a concern, but it's not a definitive danger. And therefore, you can rely on Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. So right away from this Trumas Hadeshin, whether we're prepared to marry a woman or not who has killed, who had experienced multiple almanas, she became an almana twice in a row, although it's a concern, you can rely on Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. So the Trumas Hadeshin is giving us really like a rule. If it's a definitive chashash, then you can't rely on Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. You can't do something that's definitely dangerous, that has a vaday sakana, because of Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. But if it's not a vaday sakana, if it's only a potential sakana, but it's only a far-fetched chashash, then you can rely on Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. So, v'gam nira, he says, the Trumas Hadeshin says something fascinating. Because the Jewish people are so misei ma'at, we're so decimated, that we need to find shidduchim. There's a shidduch crisis. So therefore, that's why people took the liberty to marry a katlanis and rely on Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. And it became dashu be'ravim, it became commonplace. So this really like echoes what Rashi says in Masechet Shabbos, that there was a potential danger on bloodletting when Mars corresponded to an even hour of the day. Some metaphysical concern that we can't comprehend. Nevertheless, because it was too hard on the people, and the people needed to have a meal after the bloodletting, and Friday night was a convenient time to have a meal because they're having a Suda Shabbos anyway, so it became common practice to do bloodletting, to perform the bloodletting on a Friday. So, says the Trumas Hadeshin, a very similar thing over here. Because the Jewish people were decimated, and it's Mesei Ma'at, were few in number, so therefore people took the liberty to take the risk in marrying a katlanis. Of course, we can't violate something outright. So the Rambam says it's forbidden. The Trumas Hadeshin goes in steps. He says he found in Or Zivua that it's not a prohibition, it's just a concern. So that's point number one. And then point number two, even in the face of a concern, a person can sometimes take the liberty. It becomes an acceptable risk, and we can rely on Shoymer Besoyim Hashem. Then the Trumas Hadeshin concludes with something fascinating. This is all part of the tshuva there of the Trumas Hadeshin. Tzarachian ishayach lameimer haytime shemir b'soyim Hashem l'talmud chacham. The Trumas Hadeshin wonders out loud, can a talmud chacham, somebody who's aware of the risk, can he rely on shemir b'soyim Hashem? Somebody who's not aware of the risk, Hashem protects the foolish. But somebody who's aware of the risk, so is he allowed to accept the risk upon himself? If he is aware of the risk, he's yodeya umakir, v'nizker l'muflu b'doyrei, and he's known as somebody outstanding in his generation, is he allowed to risk his life and rely on Shomer Besoyim Hashem? The Trumas Hadeshin seems to be wondering whether Shomer Besoyim Hashem guards the foolish, is that literal if we're unaware of the dangers, or is it even if the person is aware of the danger, but he feels hard pressed? And he also says that maybe they relied on this or as a ruah because of iguna, because there was also a shidduch crisis. What if a young woman, her husband's died for some strange reason, so we're going to forbid her from ever remarrying? So that would also perhaps justify relying on the arzurua and relying on Shomer B'Soy Mashem. But as we mentioned before, in Evan HaEzer, the Beis Yosef says you're not allowed to marry a katlanis, and he doesn't even bring the Trumas Adeshin, because the Trumas Adeshin, obviously because he passes like the Rambam, either because it's considered to be a definitive danger, something that we're not aware of, or because we're only relying on Shomer B'Soy Hashem if the Gemara itself says that. That might be a reason why the Beis Yosef does not cite the Trumas Adeshin, because we can't just be reckless and we can't create our own Shomer B'Soy Hashem. If the Gemara says it, we can rely on the Gemara. But perhaps we can't take a dangerous situation that we're confronted with and just ignore it and rely on Shomer B'Soy Hashem. Another example, so there's a Machlokes Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel, if a chazaka is after two times or three. The Gemara says that when it comes to katlanas, we rely on Rebbe that after two already and a chazaka is established, and the woman would not be allowed to marry a third husband. We paskin like Rebbe when it comes to a katlanas. Now, another Gemara, which is very negeh halacha lamaisa, so a lot of these things were more abstract, but the Bris Mila Gemara was a machlokes in the Paiskin. There's another Gemara that comes up all the time, and it's a debate in the Paiskin. There's a Gemara in Yevamos and in other places that three women are allowed to have relations, allowed to have intercourse with a moch. What's a moch? A moch was a primitive contraceptive that the woman would basically take a bedika cloth, and either she would insert it into her canal before the relations, and this piece of material would absorb the sperm and it would serve as some kind of a primitive contraceptive. Other Rishonim explain that it's something that she would use after the relations to try to remove as much of the sperm as possible. There's actually a machlekes in the Rishonim if a woman is allowed to destroy the seed of her husband or not. There is a Rishon, Rabbeinu Tam, who says it's permitted. Under all circumstances, most Rishonim hold that it's forbidden. This would ordinarily be forbidden because it's considered destroying the seed. It's not the topic of our discussion tonight, but the types of contraceptives we have today, either the pill, which doesn't interfere at all with the relations, there's no physical act of destroying the seed, or it doesn't interfere with the normal relations. Even a diaphragm that the woman inserts, it's high up against the cervix, it's not considered interfering with the normal relations. So this is something that there's more room to be lenient about. But this primitive contraceptive, I'm calling it, which she was mechanically destroying the seed of her husband, would normally be forbidden according to most Rishayim. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that there are three women who are allowed to use this moch, in spite of the potential prohibitions that could be involved. A katana, a minor, a pregnant woman, or a nursing mother. Now, let's talk about the minor. The Gemara tells us that there's a window where a minor, in those days it was socially acceptable to marry a minor. Tosfos in Kedushin in the beginning of the second parak discusses that it was uncommon even back then, but sometimes under extenuating circumstances, the father would be encouraged to marry his daughter off to a man. If not now, it's never. So he can marry his young daughter off to a man. Now, a ketana, before she reaches the age of 11, so she can't become pregnant anyway. Once she's already a bas mitzvah, so then it's considered safe for her to carry a baby. But there was a window where she could become expecting, she could become pregnant, there could be a conception, but on the other hand, it could be dangerous for her to carry the baby. So ketana, shemetis aber, lest she becomes pregnant, v'shemetamas, and lest she dies. So this would be a reason to use this contraceptive. What's the ketana? From 11 until 12. Okay. Those are the words of Rav Meir. Now the Chachamim say, and this is what's relevant to our discussion tonight, the Chachamim say, Achazu v'achazu mishameshes kedarka. I don't care who you are. You're always allowed to have normal relations. You're not required to use a moch. You're not required to destroy the seed. Why? Min Hashemayim Yerachemu, and from Shemayim Hashem will have mercy, as it says, Shoymer Pesoyim Hashem. So here's another very real case where it was dangerous. There was a potential danger for a girl to become pregnant. Nevertheless, the Chachamim, it's not required to use a moch, and she's allowed to have normal relations. Now, the Ritva on the spot, who actually is following his opinion that he said about the Bris Mila, says that when the Chachamim say she can have normal relations, they're permitting her to have normal relations. But if they choose to use a moich, they're also allowed to use a moch. And she's not required to rely on the miracle of Shema B'Sayim Hashem. The Ritva, not unlike he explained by the Bris Mila, you're allowed to perform the Bris Mila when it's bad weather outside, but you're not required to. That was the Ritva. The Ritva says the same thing here, that when the Chachamim say she can have normal relations, she doesn't have to concern herself with the potential risk. She's allowed to have normal relations, but she's also allowed to use the moch in spite of the potential prohibitions that could exist. In Tshuvas Achiezer, Rav Chaim Oizer Gudensky. Rav Chaim Oizer Gudensky was like the king. He was like the one who was in charge of Klal Yisrael. There was almost never anybody like him before that. They say that you can simply write on the envelope Rav Chaim Oizer Gudensky and toss it into a mailbox any place on the globe, and the letter would find itself at the doorpost, at the doorway of Rav Chaim Oizer Gudensky in Vilna. He was like the Gadol Hador par excellence. Says the Achiezer that there was a woman where the doctors said that if she becomes pregnant, there's a real risk to death. Right? This is a common occurrence, Rahman al-Islam. And Rav Chaim Oizer, the great Rav Chaim Oizer, permitted her to use a moich. So nowadays it wouldn't be an issue. Nowadays, like we said, you have very, very standard contraceptives that are less of an issue in halacha. Nevertheless, back then, Rav Chaim Oizer allowed her to destroy the seed, even according to the Chachamim, right? Even according to the Chachamim who say that she should have normal relations. So now, what's the difference between a minor having normal relations and a woman who the doctor decreed that it's a real sakana for her to have a child, another child? Because says Rav Chaim Oizer, this that the Gemara says, that a minor, according to the Chachamim, that she's allowed to have normal relations, be'emes chashash rachak, that's because it was a far-fetched risk. And it's a miyat she'enu matzui. It was an uncommon occurrence. The Chazal noticed that there was a rise, there was a surge, there was a peak in girls and minors between 11 and 12 becoming pregnant and dying in childbirth. But it was still uncommon. So the Chachamim say that you're allowed to rely on Shomer B'Sayim Hashem. But if the doctors say that there's a real sakana, that's an isolated case. That's not just a general concern. There's a specific concern for this particular woman. There's a sakana. Even the Chachamim who say in the Gemara that a minor is allowed to have relations, even the Chachamim would agree that in this case, she's allowed to take precaution. They don't have to abstain. They're allowed to have normal married life, but they're allowed to use a moich because you're not relying on Shem B'Soyim Hashem when there's Vaday Sakan. So this is really what the Trumas Hadeshin said. The Trumas Hadeshin also, when he was talking about the Kaplanis, he didn't find any justification to marry the black widow when it had been a real concern. It's only because he found the Or Zeruah who considers it just a chashash, just a concern, not a definitive danger. Then already you can talk about Shema B'Soyim Hashem. We only use Shema B'Soyim Hashem if there's some element of risk, a normal, an acceptable risk. But if it's a real danger, we don't use Shema B'Soyim Hashem. So that's what Rav Chaim Oizer says. And just to remind ourselves of the Ritva said that even if it was just a concern, a person is allowed to take precaution. He's not wrong for taking precaution. Shomer B'Soyim Hashem is only a heter. Now, let's get to more specifics. The Mincha Shloima, so this is Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. Rosh Shlomo Zalman admits that it's very vague what's considered a real sakana and what's not. Let's read the words of Rosh Shlomo Zalman together. This is item Tez Zayin. Uli Inyan Iker Hadavar. So Shlomo Zalman says, regarding the principle of the matter, the crux of the issue, ma kara safik bikuach nefesh u'maloi, what's considered really bikuach nefesh and what's not? Bi'oid, furthermore, ba'ad eifu hu gvul, what's the limit? So Rav Shlomo Zalman admits, gama noichi ba'onyi his tapakti tuva bazeh. Me, in my poverty, he says, in humility, he says, I'm very doubtful about this. I don't know myself a clear guideline, what's considered a danger and what's not. So here we go. Mitzad hasvara. So this is what Rav Shlomo Zalman says. I don't have a proof to this. I don't have a clear proof. But this is what I think. Kol shederech roiv bnei adam nevroyach bizeh. Anything that the world at large, that most people consider dangerous, and most people flee from it the way someone would flee from danger, hareze chashiv kesafik pikuach nefesh. This is considered pikuach nefesh. Vekarinim bebech yagavna v'chai behem lo shamas behem. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman cites the other famous pasuk. We apply the verse v'chai behem. He's talking about actually being doicha shamas. How do you know when you're doicha shamas, when you're not? Anything that people consider to be dangerous, if the common perception is that it's danger, and people would flee from it because of danger, then you can be doicha shabbos, and it's considered a safek pikuach nefesh. But if most people are not concerned, most people don't view it with a sense of urgency, ein zechashiv sakana, it's not called a sakana. It's almost regardless of the facts. If people, you have to look on the street. You have to take a poll. If people consider it dangerous and people flee from it, then it's a vavei sakana. Then it's pikuach nefesh. If people do not concern themselves with it, it's not considered pikuach nefesh. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, ksas dugma lekach zrikas ababuos liyaladim. So I'm not sure what these words mean. My guess is that it means vaccinations. Maybe Michael Bohm, can you help me out with this? That's what this means. Ababuos liyaladim. So I think it means vaccinations. So now, imagine if a doctor says your baby is due for his vaccine. Afogav the mitzad hadin. This is Rav Shlomo Zalman talking. Even though, technically, efshur shetzrichim be'emes lehizdaris v'asoysim behektim efshari. Im haroifi oimer shekvar higiyaz ma'am asoysim. Imagine if the doctor says that he's overdue, he's long overdue for his vaccinations. So Rav Shlomo Zalman entertains taking the vaccine on Shabbos. Maybe you can be doicha Shabbos. Why? Because he's long overdue for his measles vaccination or for his mumps vaccination. So even on Shabbos, maybe it's considered pikuach nefesh. Nevertheless, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, he applies his svara. Since people don't take it with a sense of urgency, I don't even mean the anti-vaccine group. I mean that even regular people who don't want it, who take vaccines, even if they're long overdue, they don't view it with a sense of urgency that they have to rush to the emergency room to get their vaccine. They'll schedule an appointment. It's sort of elective. They'll schedule an appointment for their vaccine next month. The doctor says, okay, next time you come in, so I'll give the vaccine. Nobody looks at it like it's urgent and it's pikuach nefesh. Even though technically it could be pikuach nefesh. Maybe chas v'shalom, the kid will catch the mumps or the measles. It could be dangerous. But we don't look at it that way. That's not the perception. We don't treat it that way. Nobody views it. Nobody takes it with that sense of urgency. Therefore, it's not considered to be pikuach nefesh. So it turns out that it's almost as if Rav Shlomo Zalman is saying that it's not objective. It's almost like it's subjective. We have to go with what the current understanding and the current behavior is. The Chazan Ish says in Ahalais, that in Simen Chaf Beis, Sekat Mamed Beis, it's not considered suffik pikuach nefesh. He gives us a little bit more of a hard definition. Something it's not considered a safek pikuach nefesh, something that could happen in the future. That means presently there's no danger. Something could develop. That's not considered a safek pikuach nefesh, and therefore we don't treat it based on something that could happen in the future if it's a sidus rechoikas. Imagine if a person has a certain illness and the illness is not in and of itself life-threatening, but something could develop from that illness. So says the Chazan Ish, if it's only a minority of cases, we wouldn't consider it pikuach nefesh now, right? Let's say the person has, I don't have an example on hand, some sort of illness now that complications could arise. So am I allowed to drive the person to the hospital on Shabbos because the person has something where of smallpox is ababu? Thank you. And Dov, is it talking about a vaccine for smallpox? That's what I think it's talking about. Thank you, Dov. So ababuos are so Dov Simon just called in that ababuos is smallpox and Zrika meant vaccination. Thank you, Dov. So I was right about that. So even though it could technically be dangerous, but people don't treat it with that sense of urgency, and therefore we can register, we can apply for the Shomer B'Soyim Hashem, we can apply for the Shomer B'Soyim Hashem status. Anytime people don't view it with a sense of urgency, we can rely on Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. The Chazon Ish says more of a hard fast gather. If a person has a condition now, that right now it's not dangerous, even though potentially it could develop into something dangerous, if it's only a minority of cases, we would not treat it currently as pikuach nefesh, the Chazon Ish says. Now, what's considered an acceptable risk regarding our behavior? L'chanan Wasserman in Kovet Shiurim in Ksubis, Ois Kuf Lamed Vav says the following, a person can rely on Shomer B'Soyim Hashem, Tzarech Loimar, a person does not have to abstain from normal activity. He's referring specifically to the Gemara there of the man who is married to the Ketana, the far-fetched risk of there being a potential danger if she becomes pregnant. Maybe she'll be pregnant. That's not clear. Maybe she'll die in pregnancy. So that's not clear. So we don't have to concern ourselves with the potential risk. Anything that's minig derech eretz, anything that's normal everyday behavior, normal actions that people behave, a person can rely on Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. So imagine if somebody would say, am I allowed to fly in an airplane? Am I allowed to drive a car? Right? There is potential risk, but it's only a potential risk. It's an acceptable risk. Refusing to get into a car or refusing to travel would already interfere with nowadays current normal behavior. We can rely on, we're eligible to rely on Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. But if the person has within to guard himself, to do something dangerous just for no reason, that's not Bechal Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. And if he doesn't watch himself, he can't rely on Hashem to watch him being Shomayim. I always had the feeling, I met, you know, these, the mountain climbers. So I alluded to it before. So I'm not talking about taking like a trail or walking on a path on the mountain. But yet you have these pictures of people that are sticking the spades into the side of the mountain with the ropes and the chains, and they're climbing themselves up, crawling up the mountain, scaling the mountain. So if you ask any of these mountain climbers, why do you do that? So they'll tell you, because I get like a rush of adrenaline knowing that any step could be my last. You know, I've seen that. I love the thrill. That knowing that any step could be my last. So that's reckless behavior for no reason, right? So that's something that you can't apply to Hashem. You can't say Hashem will save me, Hashem will protect me. If you're not, any risk that will interfere with normal behavior, an inherent risk in everyday life, that's Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. But to elect to do something dangerous, of course we can't rely on Shomer B'Soyim Hashem. The Poskim bring a raya to this Hagdara. When a person travels through the desert, he makes the Birkas HaGoimel. Nevertheless, there were people that had to travel through the desert every day for business, traveling in the Yam, taking a voyage. So people, you have to make a Bench Goimel afterwards. Nevertheless, we take the trip, flying to Eretz Yisrael. So a lot of people, most people Bench Goimel after such a trip. So if it's dangerous, why did you do it in the first place? So the answer is because it's an acceptable risk. What about normal marital relations and getting pregnant? We talked about a ketana. We brought from Rav Chaim Oizer a woman, a unique case where she's not allowed to have any more children. But what about any woman getting pregnant? Isn't there an inherent danger? Can't you violate Shabbos to take the woman to the hospital? So how are you allowed to get pregnant in the first place if there's a potential danger? The answer is because it's not forbidden to get pregnant, even if you already fulfilled the mitzvah of Puravu. And the woman herself is not even obligated in Puravu, but it's an acceptable risk because it's normal behavior. So this is really proof positive to Rabbi Hanan's Hagdara that any concern, any abstention or any extreme concern to desist from normal behavior is not required, because for that you can rely on Shema B'Sayim Hashem. But to do something out of the norm that could be avoided, that you cannot apply for Shema B'Sayim Hashem. So again, let's just summarize. If there is any activity which has an inherent risk, traveling, pregnancy, any normal activity that comes with inherent risks, potential risks, because there's no risk right now, there's no danger right now, because it's only a potential risk that's only a minority, like obviously if every woman who became pregnant would not survive pregnancy, it wouldn't be permitted to become pregnant anymore. But that's not the case. Most women survive pregnancy. So therefore, any activity which has inherent potential risks, but it's normal everyday behavior, we can rely on Shomer B'Sayim Hashem. Anything out of the ordinary, or if there is some new situation which we can avoid, then we're required to take precautions. What's considered a sakana, what's not considered a sakana, it's almost like it depends on the perception of the people. If, like Avshalom Zalman says, if people treat it as a risk, treat it as danger, then it's a danger. If people don't, then they don't. The Chazon Ish seems to say that it's more based on statistics, that if right now there's no danger, it's only a miut that it can develop into danger, we wouldn't treat it as a sakana right now, and you'd be permitted to engage in that activity. So obviously we all have the COVID in mind. So there are extreme opinions on both sides. There's also, you know, the middle of the road approach. And imagine if Chas V'Shalom this doesn't go away, and the world just, it becomes commonplace to wear a mask, you'd be required to wear a mask. If somehow it would not be commonplace, perhaps we can apply what Rav Shlomo Zalman would say, that people no longer view it as a risk. Maybe it would be like bloodletting on a Friday, or maybe it would be like a katana risking a pregnancy. If it would be something that would become commonplace, then perhaps it would already be Dosh Be'Rabin. The Beis Yosef doesn't bring the Trumas Hadeshin about a Kaplanis. So maybe we can't invent our own Dosh Be'Rabin. But certainly, in the current situation where the world at large is trying to avoid the spread and to contain it, and it's acceptable to take precaution, so for somebody not to take precaution, pashtus, we can't rely on the promise of Shemir Pesoyim Hashem, because at least in the meantime, it's still biodeinu, it's still within our power to take the normal, acceptable precautions. Okay. So that's some of the marmikonis on this issue. Yasher koyach.
This conference is no longer being recorded.
Shkoyach,
Rav Simon, thank you. Shkoyach, everybody.
Shkoyach. We should. Because of the complex subject, I'm happy to email everybody the video recording so you can prove that you were here, but also to review it again.
Yeah, good gesagt.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Larry.
Good. Use it for ammunition. Yeah.
All right, great. I see, like, some of these examples that the Gemara used, it seemed like it was a fear, superstition that once the Olam sort of, you know, didn't really care that much about, you know, sort of accepted, then seems to be that when the tzibur has that sort of emunah, then Shomer B'Sayim Hashem kind of kicks in, and we're zeichet to use that.
Yeah, but let's talk about bloodletting on a Tuesday, for example, right? So then they weren't allowed to. It's only, even at the time that they were allowed to do it on a Friday, they weren't allowed to do it on a different day when Mars fell out on an even number. So it wasn't as if they just tossed the whole superstition into the garbage. They still were going with it, and were making an exception because of Dashu Be'Rabin, because people are no longer concerned out of duress on that particular day. It was too hard to keep the halakha on a Friday. Mm-hmm. So it became permitted.
Well, this whole concept the danger of Mars, that's really stretching our...
Yeah, that's why I was mocking. Yeah. That's why I was mocking that whether we understand the danger or not is irrelevant, right? Because the Gemara was considering the danger, and the Gemara made a distinction between the other days of the week when it falls out on the even number and Friday, right? So working within the premise of the Gemara, you're not allowed to do it on any other day when it's an even number. But on Friday, we make an exception because of Shem V'Zay Mashah. So we have to take it on the Gemara's terms that although it was considered a potential danger, there was an inherent risk, but on Friday it was too hard to adhere to that guideline, so therefore we can apply Shem V'Zay Mashah because they needed the meal and it became common to do it on Friday. Or, for example, the Chachamim's opinion with the Ketana. Even though Rav Meir says that there's an inherent risk, but the Chachamim assume that it's not enough, you're allowed, it's an acceptable risk. It's an acceptable risk. And Rosh Lema Zalman basically says, does the person have to run right away and get the smallpox or the chickenpox vaccine, whatever it is? So says Rosh Lema Zalman that although technically somebody can make an argument that the person is mamish in danger not to get the smallpox vaccine as soon as possible, but people don't take it that way, right? People don't consider it to be such an urgency. It's an acceptable risk to schedule the smallpox vaccine for next visit. So that's how Rosh Lema Zalman puts it. So it factors in, Shomer B'Soyim Hashem factors in what we consider to be a danger. Because if we don't, if common practice is not to take it as a danger, then Hashem steps in and protects. But if we realize that it's a danger, then we're required to guard ourselves from it. That's what the Truma Sedeshim was wondering, right? That can a Talmud Chacham marry a Kaplanis? On the one hand, even if you assume like the Or Zeruah, that it's only a chash, but there is a chash. So Shem B'Soyim Hashem, if he knows the risk, is he allowed to look the other way? So that's part of the issue here. So at the end of the day, the Chazon Ish and Shlomo Zalman together, it seems to give us like a clear Hagdara. If the world considers it dangerous, then it's considered dangerous. And if we don't have that kind of data, so then if the Chazon Ish kicks in, if currently there's no danger, even if it could potentially develop into a danger, but if that's only a minority of cases, he's not considered in danger right now, and therefore it would not warrant violating Shabbos, for example.
Years from now, the Chayos and Shubis farm will have this whole Indian. The last numbered paragraph will be about the COVID-19.
That's right. There's a whole safer. So Michael Bode, the Rav Asher Weiss has a whole safer on all different angles of the issue.
There are chapters that are putting out like sock.
I've been looking at those chuvas also. Yeah. His Shachter's chuvas are more like what halach, you know, what how does our observance of halacha change based on the threat of the COVID, right? But he took it for granted that we have to be careful from the COVID. Rav Asher Weiss, like he jumps in whether or not we have to even take it seriously. And obviously, he comes out that we do, but he examines it from those angles also.
So I think Rav Schechter came out. Yeah, I mean, look, certainly his later Piskidim were more this is what you have to do. I think like his earlier ones, maybe the first few, kind of said what you need to do. But I think Rabbi Twersky, you know, who's another Rosh at
yeah.
YU,
yeah.
came out with a really long essay
yeah.
about precisely these issues.
Interesting. Yeah.
About you know why it's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two points. One of the things that Rabbi Herschel Schechter said, following up what Dove said, that I saw this in a lecture recently where he stated that a svek sveka of sakana safashios is derech Shabbos.
Yeah.
In the COVID context, the remotest. I don't know how he applied it, actually. You know,
yeah, but, so then that's the gray area. That's the gray area. Well, I'm sorry?
It was Rav Chaim.
Rav Chaim, yeah.
Rav Chaim is Machmer when it comes
Yeah. You know, but yeah, you also have to know, hold on, when Rav Chaim was Machmer, let's say, for example, that story, if I'm not mistaken, it was talking about also that there was some kind of... virus or some sort of epidemic. So he wanted everyone to not fast on Yom Kippur, things like that. So that could also be for the cloud, because if everybody would fast, right, in those circumstances, then for sure somebody is gonna get harmed from that, right? So that could be like one kind of pikuach nefesh. But let's say you have a particular case. Let's say you have a person who has a case of COVID. I'm not coming to give a definitive ruling here, just casually. But let's say a person has a mild case of COVID. So it's possible it could develop into something serious. But in the meantime, it's only mild. And most people get through it without any intervention. So I think that the Chazon Ish would say that currently the person's not in danger. So you wouldn't be allowed to rush to the hospital on Shabbos just because he's tested positive for COVID if currently he's not in danger, although potentially it could develop, it could become complex. But currently in the situation, he's not in danger. However, everybody, the klal has to be careful, because for the one person who could get the serious case. So I think we have to make that kind of distinction also. But if a person has a positive test of COVID, that does not automatically give him the status of somebody who's in pikuach nefesh. It's more because of the cloud. The more people that get it, then the more statistically there's going to be somebody out there who's in danger. You know, this is more like the takana. Chazal said not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Shabbos. Not because if they allow blowing the shofar, there's going to be widespread Chil Shabbos. It's because if we allow blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah forever, there's going to be one person down the line who's going to end up violating Shabbos. So because of that, they took away the mitzvah shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So I think it's more like we have to take precaution because of the one person that's going to get seriously ill. I don't think people are saying that every single person who catches COVID is going to get seriously ill. I don't think anybody's saying that. Most people survive it. It's not any individual case, I don't think, would automatically get the status of pikuach nefesh. It's just that overall, there's going to be somebody who gets a serious case. That's why we have to be careful l'chatchila, ahead of time.
There's one important distinction, is that the risk that an individual can take for themselves, you know, that's one thing. You know, like the example that Bruce Cole was talking about, you know, what's the problem? In other words, a guy wants to smoke, it's his deal. You know, he's not bothering anybody. Of course, now we know about secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
But let's say you were positive for COVID, but you have no risk factors. You're a teenager like Barron Trump. You don't have to worry about
that's the latest scandal.
Yeah, so he has a joke. So, but the point is that you shouldn't be allowed to expose somebody
that's correct.
Else.
That's correct.
To risk.
That's because, I mean, number one, he's a mazik. Even if it wouldn't be an issue of pikuach nefesh, even if it would simply get someone else sick, right? Forget about pikuach nefesh. But if you know that you're contagious, you don't have the right to go infecting other people, let alone the fact that you can actually be putting somebody out there in danger. Even if you wouldn't be putting anybody in danger, you're not supposed to get other people sick. You're a mazik. Rav Moshe, the famous Rav Moshe's tshuva, where he doesn't outright prohibit someone from smoking. Others disagree with him. Others say that nowadays it will be forbidden to smoke. But Rav Moshe never actually went so far and said it was forbidden to smoke. But he agrees that you're not allowed to smoke in public, that the rabbim has the schus to say that you can't smoke in public because you're affecting me, you're bothering me, even if it wouldn't be for the dangers associated with secondhand smoke. You're bothering me. Zemafriyali. That's it. So you're not allowed to be a mazik. So at the very least, you can't be going around contagious, infecting other people, even if it wouldn't be a shiloh pikuach nefesh. So, kal v'chomer, if there is a potential pikuach nefesh. To put yourself in danger, that's what the Rambam says, that we don't own our own body. We can't say that it's none of your business, right? The Bezin will intervene and give malchus because the person can't be dangerous. The question just is that when is it considered putting myself in danger? So any activity that has normal inherent risks, but it's normal activity, like traveling, going through the desert for business, that you're allowed to do because Shema B'Soim Hashem. But anything that's inherently, that has an inherent danger, you shouldn't do if there's no reason to do it. If you recall, we once spoke out the tshuva from the Noida Bihuda about hunting, the famous tshuva. We were talking about, at the time, we were talking about Tzar Balei Chaim. So the Noida Bihuda talks about how technically it's not Tzar Balei Chaim, but then he finds a lot of other prohibitions to hunting. And one of the things he mentions there is that if you're a hunter for Parnassa, you know, you're hunting because you want to get bear skins, you want to get the elephant tusks, whatever it is. So you're hunting for Parnassa, assuming it's legal. So then you're allowed to take the risk. But just to go hunting for sport, you're taking an unnecessary risk. So one of the things he cites there is that you're taking an unnecessary risk, even though a worker for Parnassa is allowed to climb a tree to pluck the fruit. Right, you're allowed to take inherent risks if they're justifiable, because they're acceptable risks. Shemi b'soim Hashem. But if it's for no reason, it's cavalierly, so then that's an unacceptable risk. So you can't take risk for sports. You know, the risk takers. You know, what do they call it? Daredevils. Daredevils. So daredevils would be asura pi halacha. Just to take a risk for the thrill of the risk. That would be asura. But if the person has some kind of parnasa where he has, you know, if a person has a job where he has to ride on a motorcycle, and you have to know, what about a stunt, you know, an actor? he's a stuntman in a circus or in a show. So, you know, maybe he's a Baal Tshuva, and he became frum, and he finds himself that he's an acrobat in the circus. That's what he does for a living, right? Or he's a stuntman. So is he allowed to continue doing his job because he needs it for Parnassa? That would be an interesting question.
That's the tshuva about Avram Knievel.
Evil Meroida. Evil Meroida.
Rabbi Willick, by the way, says that skiing is usur.
Skiing is usur. So these are examples of dangerous sports where you're not doing it for any reason. But let's say in the old days where that was perhaps a means of travel, then maybe it would be mutter. Okay, everybody.
A skier collided with a client of mine who was killed.
What happened? A skier, yeah.
Somebody that was on the wrong course and veered off. And then, you know, so it's not only the danger to the individual skiing, but to others as well.
Well,
That's a factor that didn't come up tonight. Maybe it comes up more in some more later post game. But to what extent might it be okay to accept a risk upon yourself, but to pose a danger to others? Maybe.
So the Rambam doesn't make a distinction. The Rambam, that was the Rambam we quoted there in Hilchos Shmiras Nefesh, but Sichon Shmiras Nefesh.
Right.
He says there that you're not allowed to accept the risk on yourself, right? If it's not justifiable, if it's not for Parnassa, if it's not an acceptable risk. But you don't have the right to take upon yourself an unacceptable risk, even if it doesn't affect anybody else. That's Mefurish in the Rambam, and the Bezdin would come and they would intervene, and they would give him Malkus. You know, they pull you over for not wearing a seatbelt. They don't do that here. They do it in Canada. They pull you over for not wearing a seatbelt. So they have the right to do that because you're not allowed to take upon yourself an unacceptable risk, even though it doesn't whether or not the driver is wearing a seatbelt or not doesn't have anything to do with anybody else.
Oh, there's a societal impact of who's going to end up paying for, especially when Joe Biden wins, who's going to pay for the medical care of the non-belted.
I was wondering about that. Right? I was wondering, maybe that's why they care so much, because it has to do with the finance.
More directly, also when somebody takes the risk, even like not wearing a seatbelt, that can necessitate heroics by first responders or even the medical staff.
Interesting.
So actually doing those sorts of things, even like driving without a seatbelt or doing other sorts of things on the road,
you might just indirectly putting other people
in effects, but could have collateral effects, which is why they enforce them.
That's very interesting, yeah. But Lamaisa, the Rambam says that the person is not allowed to accept upon himself an unacceptable risk, even if it wouldn't affect anybody else. We're not the Bialim to do
it. But doesn't calculus change? Let's say there's a risk that's somewhat acceptable or potentially acceptable. Maybe it's something to the bricks. Since there's kind of a third person involved or an outside party involved, maybe that alters it. I don't know.
It might be a factor. It might be a factor. Yeah, like for example, you know, if my, that's a good, let's say, just to oversimplify, let's say my job is to travel through the desert because I'm the Pony Express, so I can accept that for me it's an acceptable risk, but I wouldn't be allowed to just take my kid along for the ride because for him it's an unacceptable risk, right? So something that I'm allowed to do, but I'm not allowed to, even while I'm doing it, I can't impose that risk on somebody else because for him it's unacceptable.
Very fascinating.
So there's it's not 100% clear, but these are sort of like an outline, some guidelines, some parameters.
Speaking of risk, you can get your still get your free COVID test tomorrow in Poland.
Yeah. Are people going? Are people going? I'm inclined to go. Are people going?
It's very well done. It's like it takes two under 5 minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so we didn't do Tuesday because we felt that it would be more beneficial to wait a couple of days till Thursday. Okay.
All right.
All right. Yashikwesh, everybody. Good night. Yashikwesh. Yashikwesh. Yashikwesh.